You are listening to Serve, Protect, Lead, a podcast from the International Association of Chiefs of Police, where you will hear from IACP leadership and police leaders across the globe sharing wisdom, insight, and perspective.
Howdy. My name is David Chipley, Executive Director of the Colorado Information Sharing Consortium, retired Sheriff's Office Commander, co-vice chair of this working group, and you know, I'm the moderator. I hope you've enjoyed these podcasts. Welcome back to the IACP CJIS Policy Modernization Series. And as you know, the FBI policy is changing to meet modern challenges impacting your public safety entity. Aided by the Advisory Policy Board, or APB, which is comprised of public safety executives from around the country, the CJIS division of the FBI has done its best to improve CJIS policy intended to help protect all criminal justice data nationwide and beyond. Today, we present the last of six IACP-endorsed Ask the Expert podcasts covering five CJIS policy primary security control groups and their key subtopics from the first two revisions, 5.9.1 and 5.9.2. The purpose of our podcast is to present information regarding CJIS policy, something that applies to all public safety personnel in a stimulating, value-adding way. I think you'll find that especially true today. Our expert panelists today are, again, from the Athens-Clarke County Police Department in Georgia, Deputy Chief Keith Kelly, my co-vice chair of this Policy Modernization Working Group and an esteemed member of the APB with the FBI. Welcome once again, Keith.
Thank you very much. It's good to be back.
Also coming back to us is San Luis Obispo Police Department Chief Rick Scott. Chief Scott's a 27-year law enforcement veteran, serves as the chair of the IACP LEIT Technology Section, and is a tenured member of the IACP Computer Crime and Digital Evidence Committee. Appreciate your sharing time with us again yet today, Rick.
Thank you, Shep, and all my friends on the podcast. It's great to be with you all.
Good deal. Today, because it's our last podcast, I also wanted to welcome our esteemed podcast producer, Jim Emerson. Jim's the vice president at the National White Collar Crime Center. It's NWC3, serves as the chairman of the IACP Computer Crime and Digital Evidence Committee, and as the chair of this IACP CJIS Security Policy Modernization Working Group. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Shep. Great to be here.
Good. Yes. We couldn't do it without you. Now, also welcome Mr. Donnie Solon, a law enforcement subject matter expert and new business development executive for CPI, Computer Projects of Illinois, and a part-time patrol officer in Wilton, New Hampshire. Many thanks for joining us today, my good friend, Donnie.
Thanks, Chip. Always great to be here.
And once again, we're delighted to welcome a good friend of this working group, Chris Weatherly, a nearly 30-year veteran of FBI service, a very personable and affable FBI CJIS Division Information Security Officer. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Chip. It's always a pleasure to be here, sir. And do I see Crystal Combs joining us today?
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm glad you mentioned that because I would have missed it entirely. Crystal is the, Crystal, can you identify, can you at least introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Yes, I am Crystal Combs. I'm the Assistant INT Director for the City of Charlotte. And I am so pleased and honored to be a member of the podcast.
Outstanding. We gotta love having you here, I'm telling you. Now, we in this working group often direct specific CJIS-related questions to Chris because he's the FBI CJIS policy expert. Often his best answers start with, it depends, to ensure he shares responsible context. Now, Chris, did you know the impact of the word oops depends heavily upon context as well?
I didn't, Chip. Please enlighten me.
Well, I learned that the other day when I heard my barber say it, and then a little later on that day when my brain surgeon said it too. Kind of explains a lot, doesn't it? Today, in our review of CJIS policy, this expert panel will bring more practical clarity to the second of two detailed discussions involving the three remaining critical policy revisions in systems and information technology. Let's get started. Policy 5.15 SI4F states an agency needs to obtain a legal opinion regarding system monitoring activities. So question, can the legal opinion be universal, provided, or recycled from other use cases, or will this need to be specific to each agency individually?
Ship, this is Chris. From a policy perspective, what the intent of this requirement was is to make sure that each individual agency or state or however it's laid out, whatever you're monitoring on that system, make sure it's within your legal means, within your state, within your jurisdiction. So that was the intent of the policy in this particular control here.
That helps. Thank you. Now, policy 5.15 SI7 requires all agencies to perform an integrity check of software, firmware, and information systems that contain or process CJI at an agency-defined transitional state or security-relevant events at least weekly or in an automated fashion. So, an interesting question. Are there affordable resources that a small or mid-sized agency can use to frequently and reliably perform these checks?
I would venture to say that managed services would be a really great option for small to mid-sized agencies who may not have that expertise on staff to be able to provide those types of services.
Jeff, I'd like to.
Donnie, you've got some broad experience here.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Crystal is spot on with that. The problem here is that 87 or 88% of our agencies in the U.S. is less than 50 people. We don't usually typically hire people that have to have an IT degree. And when you're getting into this, which we all know we need, I mean, the APB does a phenomenal job at pointing out these things and fleshing out the issues and making policy changes. It's great how it works. But the problem is that the guys down on the field, boots on the ground, so to speak, they just don't know how to implement this stuff. And a lot of times, just because somebody's a chief doesn't mean, no offense, guys on the call, but no, it doesn't mean that they're a technical person. It just means they're really good at what they do. So having a company, a third-party company that maybe you could share, like I'd mentioned before in a previous podcast, if you can, get your IT needs together and hire a company and then split it among four or five or six agencies, it definitely helps in the cost and it certainly will get you what you need.
I think Donnie makes a great point. I appreciate your comment about chiefs not being always the most technically astute. I'm a great example of that myself. I think from a small agency standpoint, this is a great opportunity to leverage our partnerships with our vendor community, having some of this functionality baked into the products that we're buying. And I think that's how we can make our expenditures go further in our investment in our software and even hardware infrastructure.
Chief Kelly, you've got a much larger department. Is that hold true in your large department?
It does. Those vendor relationships are important. Of course, we have IT staff as well. But even then, they have to have a strong relationship with the vendor community and be able to work together to come up with good solutions.
Now, Jim, you've got some pretty broad experience across the federal government. Are there or will there be federal financial support resources to help agencies comply with this mandate?
So, Chip, it depends. And I'm going to follow Chris's lead here. It depends on whether you take the time to really look at all the resources the federal government has out there, whether we're talking about cooperative agreements or whether we're talking about, you know, stimulus money that may be trickling down from the state level into agencies, you know, at other demographics. A lot of times you have to be creative when you're following the money to figure out whether there's something out there that you could apply to solve even part of an issue like the ones we're talking about today. But I would encourage everybody to be very aggressive about figuring out where that money is and how it might be used to help them even, you know, kind of mute part of the need.
All right. So for the final critical topic of our podcast series, let's look at policy 5.15 SI-12. All agencies must manage and retain information within the system and information output from the system In accordance with applicable laws, executive orders, directives, regulations, policies, standards, guidelines, and operational requirements. So the question is, with the crossover and responsibility where IT employees are being required to know a wide array of retention schedules and requirements based on the individual pieces of information communicated, how can departments best centralize slash track this information in the digital environment?
I guess my question is, can we get some clarification? And I think that's regarding the looking back at system logs and the actual data itself. So I'd be looking for some clarification on that.
Yeah, Chief, I'd be glad to give you that clarification. So what we're looking at here, you mentioned system logs. That'll be covered in auditing and accountability, which will be released in a future version of the CJIS security policy in version 5.9.4. And it speaks about keeping, you know, the records, the audit logs of the user. This is a user that was doing the action. This is the action they did. This is where they were coming from, the date, the time. Very, very minuscule information about that activity. What SI-12 is actually looking for is the actual meat of the information that's in the system itself. And you want to make sure that you're retaining that information. One, as long as you operationally need it. And then two, you just don't want to make sure that you're not, violating any applicable laws, executive orders, directives, regulations, things like that.
And I think from the executive concern, I appreciate Keith's question and then Chris's clarification. When I hear retention and audit and logs, what immediately comes to mind is storage and greater capacities and volumes of storage to have that information available on demand. And so whether you're in the cloud or on premises, as most of us have a combination of both, I think this could potentially increase costs for our departments, or at least better allocate our resources to manage that what we could perceive to be an increase in storage.
Hey guys, I deal with a lot of states on this, and everybody's all over the place. There's almost no two states are the same. Everybody's like a fingerprint. So some states have 7 years, some states do 10, some do forever, some do the absolute minimum because they're afraid of having data they don't need to have. And that brings up a good point. If you have an exuberant amount of data that you're not obligated to keep, but you have it and it gets breached, well, now you're liable for it because you didn't have to have it. So it brings in a lot of thought as far as cybersecurity goes and who's at fault for those kind of things. So I think a lot of people are looking at that, let alone the expense, because we're seeing a lot of people move to the cloud or something similar. And that's a lot of money. The more terabytes you have, the more cash it costs you.
Hey, Chip, Donnie makes an excellent, excellent point about not keeping everything in the kitchen sink for all the reasons that he alluded to. But he also kind of brings us back to what he said earlier and what Keith said earlier about, number one, finding the right partners, finding the right opportunity to partner at a regional level, at a county level, with other agencies. I mean, law enforcement does mutual aid better than anybody on the face of the planet, right? And that's really what we're talking about here, is finding the right mutual aid scenario when it comes to technology and data and CJI. But what Chief Kelly said earlier also applies here, and that is, you get into a relationship with a third party, a contractor, you've got to manage that relationship. You have to know what they're doing, what they're not doing. That whole third party management piece, it just extends backward to you. It may solve your problem. You need to make sure it continues to solve your problem and stays worthy of your involvement throughout the longer term.
Okay, Crystal, something else Donnie said that I think you're uniquely placed to answer was exorbitant amount of data. What, from your perch, sitting atop an entire database, what does that look like? What is an exorbitant amount of data? And when is too much too much?
Well, gosh, Chip, I think it depends. sorry. It really is hard to gauge, right? Because it completely depends on what types of systems that you have and what type of data that you have. So one of the points I was going to make is classifying the record type is really the first step to making sure that you have properly identified what type of record it is to inform the retention policies, right? So, you know, is it a personnel record? Is it a criminal investigative record? Is it, you know, speak your classification, right? Because it's going to be different, as Donnie pointed out, from state to state, certainly. But anyway, so that's the first step. But I have found that having retention policies available embedded in our systems, digital evidence systems, are actually great about this, right? Because so many of them have those retention categories that we can set. And if you don't, like in our video system, if you don't set or identify a video to retain for longer than that default retention period takes place, data goes away after whatever that retention period is. You know, and again, that's based on state law, in my state, how we're approaching that. It's also document management systems can also be configured to maintain documents on a specific retention schedule. But again, it really is digging into that and understanding the different classifications of your data to understand really how long it should be kept. Of course, it could be kept forever. But should it be kept forever? That's the real question. And some of the conversations that folks need to have, because it's not something that, you know, we talk about on a daily basis.
Hey, Ship, what Crystal just said ties directly into what Chief Scott was talking about with regard to managing cost. And executives are always first and foremost after mission thinking about how to resource the agency and deal with the cost associated with that resourcing. I know people in my world that still pay for webmail accounts. In this day and age, how does that happen? You know, I mean, I can understand if you're as old as I, somebody paid for a webmail account 25 years ago, but sometimes we do the same kind of thing with data. We just let data kind of accumulate and we don't really know what it is that's accumulating. And that goes right back to what Crystal was saying. The reason we don't know is because we don't have a way to actually identify it by category and see what's occurring in real metrics in a way that we can manage it. So everything we're talking about here today, they all interact with each other, you know, to come up with successful outcomes.
And all of this comes back in support of modernizing the CGIS policy to protect all of our data. Excellent. You know, the answers that you provided today really show the depth of your experience and your ability to serve the constituents, our members at IACP. And I tell you, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for taking the time. I'm sure we're going to get some more questions just on this topic for our next podcast. Well done, all of you. Well done. Today, the panel covered 5.15 SI4, system monitoring, 5.15 SI7, software firmware and information integrity, and 5.15 SI12, information management and retention. Our sincere thanks to the members of our esteemed expert panel now and over the last six entire podcasts, Chris Weatherly, certainly, Crystal Combs, Jim Emerson, George Vitt, Jim Buckley, Donnie Sallon, Aaron Oliver, and of course, Keith Kelly and Rick Scott. Thank you all for sharing your wisdom, experience, and understanding of this highly complex and vital policy. These podcasts will be excellent references as agency leaders implement the CGIS policy updates now and into the near future. Our seventh and final podcast of the series of revisions should be one of great interest, since the panelists will do their best to answer the questions you have submitted to the IACP. Listeners, please leave a review and then anticipate more podcasts covering the CGIS policy releases from version 5.9.3, which is out and under review now. You can also learn more about the great work being done to support law enforcement professionals worldwide by visiting IACP.org. In addition to the fine panelists who made these podcasts possible, I would also like to personally thank our fearless working group chair, Jim Emerson, and my co-vice chair, Keith Kelly, Task Team 1 leader, Jim Buckley, and Task Team 2 leader, Rick Scott, for their outstanding leadership, dogged determination, and spectacular communication skills, all vital contributions to these outstanding podcasts. Well done, all. So may you all fare well as you implement the new CGIS policy updates. And until next time, may your blessings outnumber the shamrocks that grow, and may trouble avoid you wherever you go.